All right, cool. Hey, so in episode one, I complained about what I didn't like, and then in episode two, I took it back because I felt like an apologizing jerk. So now in episode three, I will explain where I came from, what I have done, and what I'm going to do. Literally, where did you come from? Where did I come from? So this is basically a creative biography in roughly chronological form. How exciting. So again, if you like me, or if you want to like me, then and you want to listen to this podcast, you can know where I'm coming from and what to expect from me. The way I interview people, that way when I interview people, you can know about me and my perspective a little bit better. So yeah, like, 'cause there's so many people out there just putting out stuff now. It's like, who are you? Where did you come from? Why are you putting something out there? Like, you know, like, oh, I know this about this. I know this about that. Probably listen to my thing. It's like, that's cool, but like, where are you? Who are you? So yeah. So I once had this small, short boilerplate bio on my website. It read, I'm going to read it. Aaron Petta is an actor who plays both comic and dramatic roles. He also performs stand-up comedy and writes records and pop songs. His objective is to keep the viewer and listener engaged by purveying catchy and innovative work. For more information on Aaron Petta, please visit aaronpetta.com. That sucks. This is a little better. I found it on IMDb. Aaron Christopher Lawrence Petta was born in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and is the older of two children of June, a schoolteacher, and Lawrence, a psychology instructor. Aaron moved to New York City in 1997 to pursue undergraduate studies in music at the City College of New York, but could not maintain focus on the rigorous discipline of classical music and incessantly brought his latest pop rock songs into his professor, Stephen Jablonski, for critique, each time hoping he had finally cracked the code of how to write a Billboard number one hit. Jablonski grew frustrated with him and eventually awarded him the Ben Jablonski Scholarship for Most Promising Jazz or Pop Composer, just to get him off his back. With his professor being the last in a list of dozens of people from random strangers to close friends saying, "You totally remind me of Jim Carrey," Aaron left the music department for the theater. With a Thomas W. Smith Fellowship, he eventually finished his BSc in Integrative Media Practice, a degree title he made up off the top of his head, but managed to get approved by the CUNY BA program. This is so exciting. That wasn't really in there. After being pulled aside after acting class and told by teacher William Esper that he couldn't act until receiving extensive therapy, Aaron quit the Esper program and apprenticed under actor Eric Loeb, a close friend of William H. Macy. Eric inspired him to take all of his stories and characters and bring them on stage in stand-up comedy. Eric's other notable student at that time was then up-and-coming comedian Jim Gaffigan. In 2010, Aaron released his first solo pop rock album, I'm Not a Hipster, which charted on college radio in New York and achieved the accolade Worst Album of the Month by Vice Magazine, of which he is very proud. Aaron has acted in numerous independent films, most of which the footage and credits remain a mystery and were never found. Aaron is currently active in the New York comedy circuit and performs at various clubs around the city. Okay, so that's exciting stuff. So that's sort of, there it is in a nutshell, right? So that's like what's on paper. But I'm going to talk because it's me, right? So I was born and raised in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And I think you have a weird blend of culture there, because it's Canada, so you have the national arts sponsorship and by the government. So it's an artsy place with classical music and plays and poetry readings and all that shiz, you know? So, but then it's Alberta, so if you don't know, you have this cowboy mentality with, like, I love this bar, and I'm a cattle-driving man, I'm a mountain man, you know? And it's like, you know, I'm a prairie man, you know? It's like, so my grandpa was a farmer, and my dad was a psychologist. My mom brought me up on 80s rock, and my dad brought me up on Beethoven. So that's sort of the milieu there, you know? I learned to play piano, but I never wanted to practice. You know, my dad sent me to lessons, and my sister always practiced. So when the Christmas recital came, she'd be, like, plinking along to all these Christmas carols that she learned, and I'd just be like, where are the notes? Bang, blunk, 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 let me make something up, you know? And it was horrible. But, you know, but then I tried to transcribe Mozart concertos because they sounded easy. I was like, oh, I can do that. You know, no, can't do that. But I, you know, we kept listening to music, listened to copious amounts of Bach, Beethoven, Liszt. Me and my dad were truly fond of the Hungarian folk energy of Franz Liszt, because that's our background, you know, it's our ethnic background. We, you got to check that stuff out. I'm going to talk about that in future episodes. Loved Handel, George Frederick Handel. We used to drink Earl Grey tea and listen to all of these CDs on the KEF loudspeakers, KEF 104 loudspeakers in the living room. But I was also getting into pop and rock music. Having grown up earlier on a lot of Beatles, Queen, Styx, Dire Straits, and breakdance music, that breakdance soundtrack, and Rolling Stones and stuff like that. You know, I can tell you my musical influences, but it'd be pointless to list them all here as they keep changing and growing. But you know what? Here it goes. I'm going to try. Really fast to save time. I'm not going to include classical musicians and performers for the most part, as they are largely unknown to most audiences. So my overall music influences are Pavement, Shakira, Igor Stravinsky. Said I wasn't going to include classical. Too bad. AC/DC, Waylon Jennings, The Beatles, Kanye West, Johnny Cash, Beyonce, Tom Waits, A Tribe Called Quest, Kesha, Benny Benassi, Stargate, The Producers, Motorhead, Black Eyed Peas, Usher, Motley Crue, Lady Gaga, Glenn Gould, Tragically Hip, Split Lip, Rayfield and Kirk Runstrom, Eric Stripp, Rihanna, Mastodon, High on Fire, Lil Wayne, Franz Liszt, Doc Watson, Claudio Arrau, Pianist, John Spencer, Blues Explosion, Bjork, B.O.B., Motorhead, Supertramp, Billy Joel, Neil Diamond, Pearl Jam, Drake, Katy Perry, Like Lee, Stone Temple Pilots, Do-Rag, Unwound, Guns N' Roses, Red Hot Chili Peppers, The Breeders, B.O.B., Rex Hobart, and The Misery Boys, cool country band from the Midwest, Thinking Fellers Union, Local 282, Neurosis, Giant's Chair, this country band guy who did the Rex Hobart also did Giant's Chair, and they're totally different. It's progressive indie rock from the 90s, Beck, Blur, Led Zeppelin, Jay-Z, Nina Hagen, Sloan, The Who, Bela Bartok, composer, Gamelan Orchestras in general from Indonesia and Bali, Ludwig van Beethoven, Robert Johnson, The Doors, Nirvana, The Pixies, Stereolab, Queens of the Stone Age, Dillinger Escape Plan, Today is the Day, Nicki Minaj, Blonde Redhead, Chris Brown, Jason Derulo, Trey Songz, Salt-N-Pepa, Johannes Brahms, composer, George Frederick Handel, obviously, Antonio Vivaldi, Ariana Grande, Calvin Harris, Praetorius, yeah, actually Praetorius, weird medieval music too, Zed, the producer, weird stuff, Selena Gomez, for sure, The Weeknd, and even sometimes Justin Bieber. Come on, guys. Now, I'm going to talk about other stuff, but like, let me just quickly list a few entertainment and media influences, like growing up to now. This is nowhere near exhaustive, and I have to look at this. So tons and tons of entertainment media influences. So Jim Carrey, Steve Martin, SpongeBob SquarePants, Tom Green, iCarly, Dan Schneider, the guy who made iCarly, and those other kids' TV shows, Victorious, that's another one, Tim and Eric, awesome show, great job, Sacha Baron Cohen, The Weirdo, Ren and Stimpy, Art Bell, Hunter S. Thompson, Dead Like Me. I never actually read Hunter Thompson, it's more than movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, so blah blah blah. Jim Jarmusch, crazy weird film director, Johnny Depp, who was in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and a movie by Jim Jarmusch called Dead Man. Dead Man was directed by Jim Jarmusch. I'm an idiot. Futurama, Monty Hellman, another weird film director, Clint Eastwood, Ernie Kovacs, 1950s vaudevillian comedian, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Monty Python, everyone on Community, so obviously Dan Harmon, the guy who made Community, and everything Lord of the Rings. More recently chosen, including Pawn Stars, Gotham, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Superstore, and Netflix. Not even going to touch Netflix. Okay, so I gotta cover more on this later. So when I was a kid, you know, I acted along to ninja movies. I collected ninja uniforms and, like, weapons and nunchucks and stuff like that. Nunchucks. My walls were covered in Motley Crue posters. Like, the huge Motley Crue posters, the big tapestries that we got in, like, Seattle, because that was the States. When we went down to the States, you had the bigger posters. So they were the big tapestries. And I had hundreds of, like, both sides of my door were covered in Motley Crue posters. And some of the bands too, Skid Row, Def Leppard, Kiss, whatever, you know. I had a trampoline. Became proficient in doing repeated backflips. I think I got to 21 in a row, and I could actually do a backflip off of the trampoline, and I could run and do a full flip on the front lawn. And if you took me to like a park or a field, I could do like tons of flips, but I could do a full frontal flip and land on my feet again. I don't know if I could do a half twist on the ground, but I could do lots of half twists on the trampoline, lots of weird tricks. I almost broke my neck many times. Trampoline sleepovers, jumping off the roof on the trampoline, throwing sprinklers and sparklers and things that catch on fire on and off of the trampoline. It's a whole crazy pandemonium childhood that I had. Involved a lot of trampoline flipping. I did well in track meet. I got to like semifinals or city finals in the long jump, and I did the running long jump, and my coach, my track coach was like, Aaron, you can make it to the Olympics, you can do it. And I'm like, ah, but I want to be in a band, man, I want to be in a band. So, yeah, I had a GMC Jimmy. I used to drive it, with my friends on the outside of the car. So I was like, hey, everybody, jump on the spoilers and the you know, whatever the panels are, and the striker panels, and we'll all just, like, drive around the parking lot and try to throw you off. Like, that's part of my creative resume, too, right, you know? So, yeah, I had the GMC Jimmy, try to get people, knock them off of the actual car, and then my friend, as I told you before, flipped it in the parking lot, and all the beer cans that we've been drinking out of fell out on the parking lot when the police showed up. And I was like, when I gave him the keys, I was like, do not drive it, just sit in it, listen to music, do not drive it, and that's the day he flipped it. Yeah, my friend got a VW Scirocco. I got a VW Scirocco, really cool with a black leather interior. Some guy T-boned it with a Ford Crown Victoria. The width of his bumper was the length of my VW. So that was gone. Started a jam band. A jam band, drank epic amounts of craft beer. Played one gig in a mall. We recorded so many jams in our own amazing studio that we rented in an office. We were called Uncompilated. And it was like the Red Hot Chili Peppers meets Bad Ayahuasca. I don't know. No, but like, we had really cool melodies and harmonies, and we used to come up with really, really extensive song patterns, but we weren't, I hate to say it, we weren't cheesy, guys, I swear. It's, we weren't corny, yeah, we weren't. I don't know. I'm gonna re-record some of those ideas, maybe put them in other songs. So I bought my first empty coiled scribbler one day around high school, started poetry, and really just kept, kept writing and writing and writing, made up my own words. And my friends called me the new Dr. Seuss. They're like, you have words that no one's ever heard of. Now, I have endless freaking books of poems and scribblers and lyrics now, like, all over the place. So began recording everything I thought of, on bass, on piano, guitar, keyboards, and it's now into the thousands of songs and song fragments. My dad bought me this book called The Einstein Factor, by Wim Wenger, and it introduced this technique called image streaming and free noting. And if you have too many creative ideas, I don't recommend it, because you're going to have so many damn ideas for creativity if you read this book that you'll be flooded and overwhelmed. So that book is a life changer. So anyways, I failed out of my first semester at University of Alberta because of $2 Tuesday beer night at the bottom of the ninth bar. It was supposed to be a sports bar, but people just cranked so much Pearl Jam and Nirvana that we all went deaf. And we even learned how to turn the jukebox up from behind. And there was like a hidden knob on the back, and we would scare away all the girls so we could just have the bros there listening to the grunge. And then I decided one day, to heck with Canada, you know. To heck with even the USA. I'm going straight to New York City. That's what I thought to myself. So, I think somebody inspired me to move there because of a multi-level marketing meeting, and he's like, if you join New Skin and move to New York City, you can make so much money. And I was just like, well, what if I just moved to New York City instead of just joining New Skin? Although I did try that too when I was a kid. So I was going to university in Canada. In Canada, they call college university. What's the difference? I don't even know. With my girlfriend at the time, to be an optometrist. And I'm like, can you imagine me being an optometrist? I don't know. So when I hit New York City, I had no idea what to do, and I was terrified of the city and terrified of Brooklyn. Literally everyone around me was either a bizarre sculptor or an abstract experimental musician or a crazy businessman or professional, like, at a level I couldn't even believe, you know, or just scary to me at the time, Puerto Rican, because at that time, when I first arrived, I didn't know. Like, I was just like, who are these people? They're tough, and they look mean. And to be honest, I assumed they were just African Americans. Now here, I know that sounds really bad, but I literally had no experience with that, and I could not tell the difference. I was a Western Canadian boy. I didn't even perceive that there was a difference. So I hid in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, because I was just scared of urban people. Like, that's how funny. I was, like, literally scared. So I hid in the Metropolitan Museum of Art for 30 days in a row. I just went there and looked at every single item and wrote notes about them in my notebooks and took pictures of them. Every single item from all eras, from all regions. And I still have the 30 buttons from going there every day. You know, I built a loft. Me and my friends, we built a loft in Brooklyn. It was a really strange art scene. We used, like, literally got the plywood, and we're like, let's make this thing. Like, well, let's make a music jam studio in the middle, make bedrooms on top. And, you know, I could do a whole episode talking about the creative Brooklyn art scene back then. You know, we had parades of random musicians on our front steps and on our streets, and, like, skateboard parties on the block, and, like, punk music just randomly, just a concert. Here's punk music. Just go. It's July, and let's do our skateboarding. It's like giant, like, flaming robotic dinosaurs at these weird art installation parties that were two stories tall inside the room. Then I went to CCNY, obviously, City College of New York. I did so many student films there, and also in Brooklyn College. I did so many student films, and literally almost all of them, the footage is lost. Like, so, like, there's, like, an ancient archive of unknown Aaron Pettit bad student film somewhere out there. So Jablonski was my main mentor, and I would just go into his office, like, my music mentor when I was there at City College. I would go into his office, not on school hours, not in the curriculum, and I'd be like, what is wrong with this song? Help me fix it. And he's like, you're a composer from the Dark Ages. You have no idea what 1-4-5 is. He's like, never mind, flat seventh. So I just kept bugging him, and he just kept helping me try to write songs, and he would just smash his head onto his desk, and he'd be just like, you're never gonna learn. So, but I mean, he was a really great mentor, and he did award me that composition award scholarship. Yeah, I studied with William Esper for, like, the summer, but that was pointless. I didn't like it at all. So then I started with this guy named Eric Loeb. And Eric Loeb was, like, do a one-man show. You have so many ideas and stories compared to, like, almost everybody who comes in here. So I'm going to help you write a one-man show. So I wrote all these strange, sporadic, absurdist jokes with him. And it was like, the jokes were like Steve Martin lost his mind on Mars or something. And it was just, so yeah, he was a big influence. And he really introduced me to showbiz and, like, the whole idea of being who you are, actually who you are, rather than relying on some useless Meisnerian technique or something like that. So yeah, that was really a big phase in my life of my creative growth, like, to being, like, an entertainer, performer, and stuff like that. And around the same time, I did vocal technique with Jim Lynn, also in Manhattan. Jim was another big mentor because he showed me how to create proper vocal tone, which is the underlying basis for all proper singing and speech, and regardless of your style or genre. So of course, some characters in music styles, you do have to injure your voice. You do have to hurt your voice to produce it. But if you know what you're doing, at least you know the price you're actually paying. Before him, I could not sing. And there are so many professionals out there who are way more successful and way more famous than me, whether they be voice actors or whether they be... and I think voice actors are a little bit better than singers, especially, like, in the pop and rock sphere, because there are so many singers out there who literally have, like, destroyed their voices, and they're still doing it, and they still have a great technique and a great sound. Well, not a great technique, but they have a great sound and great passion and energy, but they literally don't know how to get away from their extrinsic vocal muscles and just use the intrinsic ones, which is the key. It's a physical thing. Anyways, this is boring, so I don't want to talk about this. Then I got bored of New York City, and I thought, how about Vancouver? That's got to be more exciting than Manhattan, right? You know, I'll go back to Canada. So I became a vegetarian, got incredibly fat. More on that in later episodes. Packed all my stuff in a 1981 Ford E350 Econoline van, whatever the hell that is, and took it to Vancouver with a 5-week trip to Arizona and New Mexico ghost towns thrown in for craziness. I know, Arizona is totally on the way to Canada from New York, right? I took so many pictures of ghost towns that I've totally lost over the years, thousands. So in Vancouver, I decided to go for, like, a cowboy style. It's got some cowboy boots, got a Chevy S10 pickup, started delivering meat out of the back of my truck as a vegetarian. I also tried stand-up comedy there since my agent only sent me out on, like, 2 auditions all year. I was in the process of finishing, like, a post-hardcore, post-punk. Don't you love that word post, like, in music, you know? It makes you sound so pretentious. Post-punk, post-pop. Like, it's always... Anyway, so this weird, loud, scruffy, grungy rock album. And I was doing it in my apartment. And I rented a main floor basement off of a nice couple who lived upstairs. And when the priest came to bless the house, I was recording this screaming death metal vocal into the microphone, and he said, let's put extra holy water on this man's door, on this, bless this man, he needs a blessing, make sure that the evil spirits don't take him. So that was my little Vancouver moment. So I went to Vancouver, tried some comedy, you know, and my original style was non sequitur, lots of physical action, very hard to relate to, it's like a big problem in my life, nobody can relate to me, unrelatable. It came from this strange Western Canadian who had been slammed up against Brooklyn and New York City. It was this bizarre juxtaposition of personalities and characters and influences. Then I went to Toronto for like a while, did more stand-up comedy, went to Second City, did some improv stuff there, kind of wandered around Toronto and trying to do some acting and stuff like that. And I was bored with Toronto, like back to New York City, right? So back to New York City, more stand-up comedy. I finished my CUNY BA made up degree. I called it integrative media practice. So like I was in City College, I was bored of the journalism program, bored of the theater program, bored of the music program, beep that up. And you know what, I don't have the rating system on this thing. I try not to use dirty potty words, but sometimes it happens. So I got into the CUNY BA program because I want to be able to take courses in the different, you know, New York University college system, in this CUNY system. So I took a lot of courses at Hunter. I took some courses at Queens, one course at Queens maybe, and at City and stuff like that. That's a lot at Hunter. So in Baruch College. So I made up my degree called Integrative Media Practice, meaning like theater, film, anything that involves making media, and theater is technically not it, but you know, so music, recording, and it was just like, and the practice, not the theory of it. And they of course approved it because, hey, liberal arts college, approve everything. And I got my CUNY BA, which is a baccalaureate for unique and interdisciplinary in studies or something like that. And there was little to do, and we had like a festival for the people who won an award ceremony night with champagne and hors d'oeuvres, and then if you got awarded your fellowship. Not everybody got that. So I used to hang out in the studio on Fifth Avenue and interview all these entrepreneurs and these weird startup guys and writers and event coordinators and just like strange, like, you know, people. And this office was called Good News Broadcast, and the owner was this creative nutty guy called Paul Sladkiss. And I had the keys at night, and I would go in and play the piano in the middle of the night and improvise all these weird atonal pieces in this huge cluttered studio with all these computers and books and professional samples and random setups of things from wall to wall everywhere. I used to drink a big Miller Lite, and so I wrote this piano piece, and I called it Miller Lite. I still have it somewhere. But yeah, that was a strange episode too, the Good News Broadcast era, just interviewing strange people. So I was in this band with this guy for a while, and it never went anywhere again. Bands never seemed to go anywhere in my life. He wanted to do classic rock, and he really pushed in this direction. He just really wanted to do like this sort of like Rolling Stones, Kiss kind of sound, and I was just not into it. I thought he was being ironic, but he was really serious. Like, no, we can do this and we can be cool. I'm like, you do realize it's not cool, right? Like, he thought it was just so cool, and so I was getting more and more embarrassed by it. It wasn't a match, and I don't want to say bad things about people, but whatever. So I was in this band that I just felt like I was pressured into being in, and I just left eventually. But we wrote a couple of cool songs. I might release one of them one day, one of the ones that I wrote, a couple of ones that I wrote maybe. I liked my songs. Our songs were all right. But the style was just, very stale. However, I was into spiking my hair black. And spiking my hair and black nail polish and all that stuff. So if you met me then, or if you knew me then, I look like a 70s punk, Brit punk weirdo. It's a fly back and forth all over the place to California and get drunk for the night and party and fly back and forth because, you know, all these people who worked in the airline business and I get their buddy passes and stuff like that. So it'd be like, hey, what do you want? You want to go away for like 24 hours, get drunk in California and come back? So it's like I was a rock star but not actually playing gigs. Just like go across the country, you know, party, eat a fancy meal, get drunk, come back, you know. No concerts. Flew back and forth like 50 times. And then that was when I started getting into Pilates, yoga, meditation. Actually, meditation started way, way earlier, like first time in Brooklyn, but just not consistently. And then the primal and then the paleo diet. You know, after failing at the blood type diet, because I started to get really fatigued and stuff like that, so I was trying new diets. And so I'm really like pretty much committed to the paleo diet for like the past... It's getting close to 8 or 9 years, whatever. I mean, no, there's definitely been fall offs, but like I've known about it and been working at it for doing it for a long time. I'm not a hipster. I'm not a hipster. And hipster is an outdated word now, but I released an album in 2010 called I'm Not a Hipster because I wanted to do the solo album. And I made the mistake of recording an entire album instead of just doing a single and then seeing how that worked and then releasing another single. So I spent a lot of money and time releasing this album when I really didn't know songwriting and production. And I had a really good producer, and he helped me to the best of his abilities. And he was a really great guy, Stacy Odell. And he did his best, but I really didn't understand pop music writing yet, like how to produce it and record it. And I should have known more about that on my own before going that far with it. And so what I made was this sort of like over amalgamated, weird, hybridized mess of like pop and rock that just sort of didn't fit anywhere. Again, like most stuff in my life that I do, like I think that's like my whole life's bio. I'm a misfit, right? So what I'm going to do now maybe is I'm going to read this. This is an extended, like uncut, super long-winded version of the bio my publicist created for the press release for I'm Not a Hipster. So bear with me. This explains a lot of music stuff. It's a windfall. A windfall, that means profits. I don't know. Let's hope we get profits. Here we go. Left-handed people are more creative than right-handed people. Other than ice and snow, entertainers are Canada's only gift to the world. Aaron Petta is a left-handed Canadian. What are the chances? Transplanting himself from his native Edmonton, Alberta, and absorbing the character of New York City, Aaron has begun developing an output of music quite unlike any other. On his debut record, I'm Not a Hipster, released in June 2010, Aaron recorded 10 of his best hook-filled pop rock songs. Bob Seuss of Rock and Roll Experience wrote, "It's the male equivalence of Kesha." Brian Palmer of Stereo Subversion wrote, "This is by far the most unique album I've listened to in 2010. Bill Sherman of Blog Critics wrote, "Yeah, this guy knows his boho music scene, all right." And Vice Magazine gave the album the honor of Worst Album of the Month. Those hipsters. According to Aaron, the origins of the title track, I'm Not a Hipster, derive from his intention to be separated from hipsters after living in lofts in Williamsburg, Brooklyn for too long. His offbeat sense of humor separates him from those who drink organic beer and smell weird. As the title of the record states, Aaron Petta is not a hipster. He has a low-carb diet, he likes light American beer, but not PBR. The contents of Aaron Petta's fridge include broccoli, anchovies, nail polish, avocados, and reels of 16mm film, but no leftover Chinese food. Aaron's eclectic taste in music is reflected on I'm Not a Hipster, and the disc covers a multitude of lyrical and musical moods and observations, ranging from the wry and the witty to the achingly honest. From the psychedelic country rock ballad Way Home, whose bridge was inspired by the opening song from the 1952 classic movie High Noon, to the ultra-modern We're Coming, with its avant-jazz chorus and urban vocal style, diversity is among the hallmarks of I'm Not a Hipster. On his debut record, he says, "I tried to give each song as much personality as possible. The track Your Songs Have No Form was based on abstract musical streams that lasted for 30 minutes or more with random chords and strange lyrics from off the top of his head. His music dreams, as he calls them. We're inspired by a book about how to become a genius." Side note, that book is The Einstein Factor by Windwanger. Another track from I'm Not a Hipster called We Are God. In another track from I'm Not a Hipster called We Are God, Aaron refers to Another track from I'm Not a Hipster called We Are God, Aaron refers to as a song about how when you fall in love with someone, he continues, "You feel so powerful and everything is so beautiful and exciting. The two of you are like the gods of your own universe." That is the cheesiest thing I've ever heard. Cut. So using both traditional and modern rock techniques, the record incorporates elements from a wide variety of styles. Old, overdriven tube amps buzz alongside modern synths. Acoustic drum sounds are blended with snappy electro snares. And the perennially cliche auto-tuned vocal effects are sprinkled sporadically in novel ways. Produced by up-and-coming NYC producer Stacy Odell, I'm Not a Hipster also features Kill Code's Pat Harrington's searing lead guitar on the track Break Down Gravity's Weight. Aaron, who moved to New York City to complete a BSc in integrative media practice, whatever that means, honed his songwriting craft when he apprenticed in music composition under Dr. Stephen Jablonski, chair of the CCNY Music Department, an accomplished composer, music theorist, and painter. The music department awarded Aaron the Ben Jablonski Scholarship for exceptional talents in composition of jazz or popular music. Interestingly, Aaron's musical mentorship can be traced back to early times, as Jablonski studied under Pierre Boulez, who studied under Oliver Messiaen, who studied under Paul Dukas, alongside Debussy, who studied under the caveman with the beard who banged on a log. Influenced by a diverse group of artists from Pavement to Motorhead and then from Shakira to Kanye West, Aaron's output is continually being mutated, reselected, and refined. But don't mistake him for a Zappa or a Ween or a Mr. Bungle. Aaron is not an eclectic absurdist. He is seeking to strike a balance between modern pop, which he loves, and idiosyncratic artistry, which he is indebted to from his musical upbringing. Growing up in the frozen wastelands of Alberta, Canada, Aaron's earliest memories of music include listening to his father playing Glenn Miller's In the Mood on the living room piano and his mother singing and playing acoustic guitar in church. He began dabbling in the art of spontaneous composition at an early age. By grade school, he started pounding on the piano, not randomly, but with the intention of figuring out the notes to the symphonies and concertos blasting from his father's high-fidelity turntable stereo. Says Aaron, "As a kid, I remember listening to my dad's stereo and thinking, hey, I'm going to transcribe Mozart's 21st Piano Concerto because that's easy. I mean, it sounds easy. Well, it wasn't. So I banged my head on the piano like that guy on Sesame Street who was the Muppet version of Beethoven." He then took the mangled transcription and his bruised head and ego to his piano teacher who said, "No, no, no. This is a piano lesson. You're supposed to play the piano, not rewrite and transcribe the music that composers already wrote." So instead of being a classical composer, Aaron wrote riffs, first piano riffs. Then he picked up the bass at age 13 and began writing loud bass riffs, inspired by the hair metal of the time. He soon got a tape recorder and began cataloging his increasingly large collection of riffs and progressions, both transcribed and original. This ballooned into hundreds upon hundreds of songs and compositions, stints in various weird bands, until finally leading up to I'm Not a Hipster in 2010. After dusting off the rubble from the release of the first album, Aaron is now in the midst of developing his second. "The new sound," Aaron said, "is going to be way bigger, louder, more modern, more electronic, and in your face, with brighter, tighter vocals, cooler synths, dancier beats, and more importantly, super catchy pop hooks." Collaborations on this album include upcoming NYC producer Ben Lindell, who's worked with 50 Cent and MGMT, Robert Prine of the Brooklyn art rock outfit The Rose West, and Gordon Grody, vocal coach to now legendary Lady Gaga and Alicia Keys. For the first single, look for, oh, and there's the name of it, Rich Life. Okay, so I'm done talking about that, blah, 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 blah. So there's a really long overextended thing, and some of those bands, my friend Robert, he actually sang on the first single. First single's recorded, it's called Rich Life, and I'm going to release it very, very soon. So that's another thing, too. So I released the first album in 2010, blah, that was a lot to talk about there, and I got really into, like, Lady Gaga and new hip-hop, what was going on with Drake and stuff like that at that time, because he was, I mean, yeah, he's still cool, whatever, it was really cool back then. Obviously, Kanye was always exciting and interesting. And I went to more theater school, HB Studio, just went to more theater courses. So I started recording my second album, called Superman 2, as in T-O-O, as in also, ha ha ha, where's the joke, there's the joke, with Ben Lindell. He's a really cool producer. And so we started doing, we got like 10 sketches done, and like some of the songs were almost complete now. And I put that on hold again. So yeah, I went to grad school. This is a lot of stuff. Like, I'm just trying to say, like, again, what is this episode? It's about who I am. So I went to grad school, dropped out of grad school. I was studying the Mall's Master of Arts in Liberal Studies, and I couldn't find a thesis sort of advisor. I couldn't find somebody who I liked to advise me for my thesis. So a proper mentor. So I just was like, I'm out of here. So I quit that. So then I went to Toronto, and I continued working on my second album at Voodoo Records. So much recording and so much vocals and writing and rewriting and rewriting. And so my second album's almost done, but again, it's on hold right now. Came back to New York. I did two plays at the American Theater of Actors as an actor again, obviously. And it's this really cool theater in Midtown. It's this old, kind of broken down, but like has this spooky, kind of like old school New York look and feel. And I did two plays. I did Strangers and I did Disconnect, in the opposite order of what I just said. And they were really, really cool, especially Disconnect. It was like a big role, sci-fi, kind of like trapped in this weird mind situation. And it was like almost losing my mind in the play. And it was cool. I was on stage for like 2 hours, an hour and a half straight without even a set change. Like, it's literally like I was on stage for the entire play. And in Strangers, I played this sort of drunken, fallen novelist, or like aspiring to be a novelist, like sort of a failed drunken school teacher. Anyway, so that was fun. Here's my bio from the American Theater of Actors. More info about my bio, more bio from my... Aaron Petta, Ron, has been acting in film and performing stand-up comedy for over a decade. He is also known for his pop rock album, I'm Not a Hipster, which he wrote, recorded, sang, and co-produced. The album enjoyed critical praise and charting success on college radio. He is currently working on a second album and producing his next music video. He trained at the CCNY Theater Department HBO Studio, The Pit NYC, and Second City. This is his second theater performance with ATA after appearing as Limbic in the sci-fi thriller Disconnect. So yeah, the new song is called Rich Life. I'm going to release it soon. I promise. I really like it. I think it's the best song so far, will be the best song that I will have released. I have better songs that I've written and are almost recorded, but it's a really, I like it. It's cool. Anyways, Killer Broccoli t-shirts. I have been designing these t-shirts for like a long, long time. And they're crazy characters that I've drawn all throughout my life. And then I scanned and colorized and texturized them, both with pens and pencils and also with computer processes, graphic processes. They really look amateurish. I did that on purpose, but I cleaned it up. And so I don't know what the new series are going to be like. So the killerbroccoli.com is the website. And it might be down at the moment, but I'm putting it back up and I'm going to re-release this because I want to have a branded t-shirt name. You know, it's like, I don't know, like rappers have like, you know, their different like high-end brands, and Gwen Stefani's got her thing or whatever, you know. But it's like, I wanted to make something fun and cool and wacky. So wacky, what a great word, right? Wacky, oh my God, are you from the 90s? So yeah, Killer Broccoli t-shirt line, killerbroccoli.com. I have so many new vlogs to release, and I'm going to start working on my vlogs. So this is about me, where I came from, and my creative sort of direction. So all these vlogs I'm going to release, like basically vlogs I'm going to do that are jokes, stories, ideas, different things. So there's like updates, but then there's also like, hey, so did you hear the one about the airline guy who fell out of the plane? Blah, blah, blah. So anyways, I didn't know the guy who opened his Bud Light and jumped out of the plane. My friends knew him. Then there's this podcast. Woo! I mean, I hope this will probably be the longest episode ever of this podcast, unless I have like a crazy long-winded guest. Running shows and open mics in the village. So I am running a monthly show at the Lantern. And I run an open mic at the Lantern, and that's Fridays. My show's usually on Tuesdays. It's a monthly show. That's a comedy club / bar and grill in Bleecker Street. And I'm doing different comedy in different locations, but I've kind of put that on hold for now. I'm going to rewrite, and I'm going to start getting back out there and doing comedy in different locations again, stand-up comedy. Comedians. All right, so let's talk about comedians who influence me. Definitely, Jim and Steve, I said those guys. Gaffigan is really cool. We had the same coach, Eric Loeb, I said at one point. Eric was also good friends with William H. Macy and did plays with Chris Walken. So Eric was a pretty, you know, he's a pretty about there kind of guy. Has anyone spoken to Eric recently? Like, what's going on with him? How's he doing? He moved out to the West Coast, and I've lost touch with him. You know, Nick Vatterott, absolute genius. Obscure, but definitely the world needs him to become famous. I mean, more than he needs it from the world. Like, the world needs Nick Vatterott more than he needs the world. Like, he's just that funny and cool. Early Joe Rogan, and ironically early Dane Cook, who apparently stole something from Joe Rogan or something like that. I don't know. So new Joe Rogan's great too. Obviously Louis C.K. Bill Burr is hit or miss for me. Bill Burr is like, he seems bitter, and bitter comedy doesn't work for me at all, you know. And I'm not going to name any more names, bitter comedians and all, you know. So I love Chelsea Handler on her show. She can be bitter, but she somehow makes it funny. On her shows, for sure. Both of them. The new one and the Netflix. The old one and the Netflix. Natasha Leggero. She's funny girl. And Eliza Schlesinger, one of my favorites. So virtuosic. And so many amazing, too many amazing comedians to list out there. Mike Kaplan, is that how you say it? Mike Q. Kaplan, for his rapid fire word puzzles that he also goes and really fast. He puts so many puns in one sentence. It's amazing. I actually know a lot of local comedians who are super talented, and we'll hopefully get them on this damn thing right now. We'll get them on this podcast right now. We're going to come in the room right now. So, who else? Oh, the guy who spazzes out about Metallica and the Mets. Jim Brewer. He's great. He's hilarious. Total spaz. Hannibal Buress. Amazing. Ben Bailey. Go and listen to, he's the cash cab guy. Go and listen to the story about the owl outside the window. The Owl Outside My Window by Ben Bailey. I don't Google it. So hilarious. And Brian Regan, probably the ultimate modern comedian. As far as apex of quality and laughability, I think Brian Regan, and he's clean. That's the thing. He's clean. He doesn't say F you. You could play his show for a bunch of 5-year-olds or a bunch of rowdy dudes, rowdy bros at a frat house, and it's going to work just as good on either group, either way. So that's class. That is class, you know. Now, If you want to have a great lesson in life, go and YouTube Larry Miller's The 5 Stages of Drinking, or The 5 Levels of Drinking. Comedy classic. Comedy's an endless vortex, and I'm currently rehacking all my hacky comedy bits, rewriting them from the ground up, and determining my own personal comedy style over the years has been the toughest thing for me. Branding sucks. I don't like being one thing. I used to do these weird abstract things, and then I went lowbrow, and I found it was easy to get laughs, like, from being dirty or crass or sexual or toilet-based, you know? But that seemed cheap. People seem to be laughing just due to the discomfort of the appropriateness, inappropriateness, instead of the genius of the comedic convention. So, I try to stay away from that now. Absurdism and abstraction are hard for an audience to embrace, and that's the other problem. And so, you know, how much talking versus how much physical action and comedic portrayals and characterizations is an ongoing debate-a-saurus for me. I have ideas for various YouTube channels, from how-tos to music to sketches and interviews and stuff like that. what do I have? I have thepetafiles.com, thepetafiles.com. It's on my weird blog. It's got multimedia styles and weird ideas, The Petafiles. I have aaronpeta.com/blog, which is my normal blog. I have a Twitter for my dreams, at Aaron's Dreams. I have a Twitter for my industry news, at Aaron Peta News, AaronPetaNews. I have a Bandcamp, a SoundCloud, a Facebook page, a couple of Facebook pages for various things. What am I going to do? I'm going to do a small episode with a couple, links to all my sites and social profiles in another time, just to get all that squared away and disseminated, just to get that out there. So never mind all that for now. I have the concepts for 7 more albums, at least. It's cracked out. And I guess, like, my current musical style, I have so many mashups of sound and style. I could say I like hip-hop beats, pop, R&B, mixed with natural indie rock style, but then I was thinking of making an album of late 70s, early 80s, like, sort of like hard sugar rock, like in the vein of, you know, early Styx and Loverboy and Jake Giles Band. So, you know, and also a sequel to Abbey Road by the Beatles, with like thick vocal harmonies and wandering, you know, wandering grand melodic songs that suddenly erratically burst out into like energy forms. And so I was thinking about doing that, you know. So through all this stuff, all my life, I always kept writing songs, jokes, sketches, poems, vlog ideas, business plans, stories, copious amounts of voice notes, and of all sorts, averaging 5 to 10 ideas a day over a period of decades. I mean, you can imagine how cluttered my collection of hard drives is, and notebooks. So I estimate my total number of original ideas, it'd be well over 10,000, possibly in the neighborhood of 50,000. I'm not bragging, it's like, oh, what the heck, I have too many ideas. You know, the problem with ideas is they never stop. You know, they're always just coming to me. It's almost a burden, like, to have my tape machine or notebook and now my phone right beside me, you know, it's like, I have to have it all the time, because, oh, here comes another brilliant idea. You know, it's like, I can't get rid of it, but I'm grateful that I have an infinite number of ideas. I never have time to, like, you know, fish or work for what's going to come next. Like, it's just a matter of choosing from the massive Wikipedia of my mind, or more accurately, the Wikipedia. The other problem with ideas is that they're ideas. They're not finished published works. They're not movies, released songs, seasons of TV shows, onstage comedy shows, you know? They're not released podcasts. Like, this is going to be released. And so, that's what I'm going to do now, and partially use this podcast to detail those endeavors. Going from ideas to finished, sold, and consumed products. That's the goal. So soon I have to figure out what to do with my Patreon. My Patreon, that's where you get subscribers and you get some money for doing what you do. So what to use it for and how to do it. So if anyone has a successful Patreon out there or knows anything about how to work it or market it, please, please, please let me know. Because Patreon equals money, and money equals happy, right? That's the old adage, right? Money buys happiness. Money is happiness. So yeah. All right, so that's me. Next time, we're talking to a guest. We're going to use this podcast. I have a few of people who are going to be my first guests, so I'm going to pick from one of those. We're going to use this podcast to get all sorts of different ideas and stuff out there from people who have done all sorts of things and have all sorts of perspectives. This is not a comedy podcast. This is not a science podcast. This is not a history podcast. This is not an entertainment review podcast. This is not an acting podcast. This is not a health podcast. This is not an optimal performance podcast. This is not an accelerated learning podcast. And least of all, this is not an Aaron Petta rambling on and on and on about Aaron Petta podcast. This episode is, but the rest of them aren't. So, this is not any specific type of podcast. It's a podcast of interest and fun, and will go in whatever direction I and you feel, and you, all of you, one of you, including me, all of us feel is worthwhile and filled with awesome mania. That's a word. I made it up. Somebody else made it up. It's a real word. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.